Hello there. This is the Psychology Report, and it's good to have you with me again today. You know, many years ago, I remember my parents watching a television program produced by the television personality Art Linkletter. You know, the television program was Kids Say the Darndest Things. And in that program, Art Linkletter would interview young children, sometimes 6 years of age, eight, five, four, something like that, and ask them a question, and then record the response to that question. And many of these kids would come up with some weird answer, a very humorous answer, an answer that was off the chart, you know, for a kid of that age or related to that particular question. And then, you know, audience would laugh, and, of course, then they almost score how each kid said the darndest thing. But it was a popular program and one that, you know, really taught a, kind of a basic lesson, you know, and that is children have their own way of thinking. Children have their own way of perceiving the world. Children have their own way of responding to events and situations that take place in their world. And we need to listen to children. We need to respond to children. We need to bring children into our life and learn from them and see their perspective on life and see their perspective on situations that occur and that affect them. So it's not just that it's a humorous program, but it's a program that really brings forward the idea that children can be teachers. Children can teach us something. Children can, from their perspective on life and situations that develop around their life and in their life, can bring to us a basic common lesson of how to perceive the world and how we respond to situations. And we can be much more serious or we can be much more humorous, lighthearted. We can take things very, very deeply or we can take things kind of lightly. So it's a matter of learning from children. And from some of the ways that they express themselves, funny though that may be. So, today what I'd like to do is introduce a topic of the darndest things kids do. You know, children, you know, are known for a variety of behavior patterns that we as adults perhaps don't like, would not want them to engage in. But they do. And we need to learn how to handle that. We need to learn how to respond to children in their life when they engage in some of these kind of behavior patterns. Let's take a few of them just as an example, okay? Number one, children hit each other. Now, that's kind of a basic understanding that children hit each other and a common behavior pattern, but it's certainly something that we as adults and as parents would rather our children not do, but they do. They hit each other for the darndest things, for the darndest reasons. Sometimes it's teasing. Sometimes it's just kind of interplay. Sometimes it's competition. You know, sometimes it's anger. So kids hit each other, and we as parents need to look at that behavior, not just as a behavior pattern of saying it's inappropriate or it was wrong for the occasion or it shouldn't be done, big brother shouldn't hit little sister or whatever, but look at it from the context of really what is the kid saying to us by his behavior pattern of hitting someone else. It may not even be a sibling that he hits. Some children hit parents, and even parents allow it. Parents encourage it. So kids do hit each other. You know, in the psychological research on this topic, it's been pretty clear and pretty consistent that children imitate. Their social behavior patterns are imitational. Now here's what this means. That if a kid grows up in a home where he is hit, or he sees hitting, where there's abuse, where there's physical violence, that child will tend to behave and respond and react in the same way at school, on the playground, and with his siblings. In other words, children imitate the behavior of parents. So we as parents, we teach hitting behavior every time we hit something. It may not be hitting a child, it might be hitting a dog, it might be hitting a cat, it might be hitting a table, it might be hitting a wall, it might be hitting some kind of an object. But if we as parents hit, the high likelihood that our children will hit. So that's imitational behavior. And we need to reverse that. We need to teach children kindness. We need to teach children to be understanding and be thoughtful and to be considerate and to be soft in their approach to other people and to other kids and to dogs and to objects. But they won't be if we're not. This is the issue. We as parents set the tone. We as parents set the behavior patterns. We as parents teach how to behave in certain situations. And when frustrated, we hit. A child will hit when they're frustrated. If we yell, a child will yell when frustrated. So there's that tendency to act as we act as parents. We set the pace. We set the tone. We set the type of behavior pattern that our children will manifest and live with and demonstrate and make part of their daily behavior patterns. So we need to be very careful how we as parents respond to situations. So their hitting behavior doesn't just come out of the blue. It comes out of what they see around them, and they see us as parents do, and what we allow and what we seem to just go along with or ignore. And a child will likewise behave in that way. A recent study was done in which they took a bunch of kids that watch violent videos on their iPads, on their iPhones, and some of the gaming that they engaged in that was considered to be violent gaming. And then they studied these kids in terms of how they thought and some of their feelings that they had and expressed, and some of the ways that they talked and expressed themselves and reacted to situations. And what they found was this, that the children that engaged in the greatest degree of violent videos also were the children that expressed violent feelings, had violent thoughts, had violent inclinations, had violent tendencies. Now, they didn't necessarily act violently, but if they were provoked, they would act violently. If they were challenged, they would act violently. If they were stressed, they would act violently. So it seemed that violent behavior needed some kind of a trigger. But the basic tendency was there. Why? Because they were bathed in this kind of world and visual world of violence through videos and video gaming that they engage in on a daily basis. So yeah, kids do hit. Kids do act violently. Kids do act out. On one hand, we teach it as parents because of the way we behave. And on the other hand, we allow it. When we encourage and we allow our children to engage in a high degree of violent video activity on their iPads and their gaming behavior. So we as parents need to modify that. We need to challenge that. We need to stop that kind of behavior. Don't let your kids bathe themselves in violent videos. Stop that. And if you are hitting each other in the home, and you're seeing that develop now at the second level, that the kids start to hit each other, that behavior has to stop. In contrast, what we want to teach our children is kindness, is consideration, is thoughtfulness, is being gracious and kind to each other. Okay, that's one example. Some of the darnest things that kids do, they hit. Here's another one. Here's the second one. Kids cuss. You know, we as parents, if we cuss, what's going to happen? Our kid's going to cuss. You know, those around us are going to cuss. See, verbal behavior, language behavior, is learned. We listen and we imitate it. We listen to a sound and we reproduce it. We listen to a word choice and we reproduce it. We imitate it. We say the same thing back, and we say the same thing under the same circumstances and situations. So if a parent engages in verbal behavior that is of a cussing nature verbally, And if that happens when a parent is stressed or something disappointing happens or something unexpected happens, well, the child in that home will tend to behave in the same way as that parent. When that child gets hurt, when that child has something that's disappointing, when that child has something happen that is stressful, what's that child going to do? Do the same behavior as his parents did. Cuss. See, it's learned behavior. It's an expression. And there are lots of expressions. There are a lot of cussing expressions. And you can make a long list of cussing expressions that either you as a parent say or that you allow your children to hear in your home and with your friends and at school and in your neighborhood and so on. So you could make a list of 25 cussing words that your kids get exposed to. Or you have the alternative of eliminating cussing words from your home and speak only in words that are gracious and kindly and considerate of others and in tones that are pleasant, in tones that are thoughtful and respectful. If your kid is cussing, that kid is hearing cussing words and hearing from the home, hearing from the schoolroom, hearing from the classroom, hearing from the playground, hearing from the neighborhood, and hearing it from wherever that kid is. And if you're allowing your kid to be exposed to that kind of language, then you're not doing your job as a parent. You're basically allowing a child to learn a language system. It's kind of like learning a foreign language, you know? You'll learn that by hearing certain words as well. You can learn a lot of different foreign languages if you just listen and then imitate. Listen and imitate. And cussing is like a foreign language. You hear it and you imitate it, and it becomes part of your language system. And ways that you respond and react to circumstances and situations in your daily life. So cussing is learned word choice when it's triggered by a certain kind of an event. So why do kids cuss? Because you cuss as a parent. Because you allow the child to be exposed to other kids who cuss. Because you bring people into your home who cuss. Or because you go places where cussing words are expressed in front of your child and you do nothing about it. You go along with it or you just allow it to take place. I remember one time I was going to a football game with my children. They were young. And there were a group of guys about two rows in back of me. And they were not only drinking considerably, but they were cussing quite considerably, actually. And I turned around and I said, "You guys stop it. I have two children here and I don't want them to hear those kind of words." And for the rest of the game, there were no cuss words expressed. They stopped it because I asked them to stop it and gave them a reason to stop it. And you can do that in your home. You can do that on behalf of your own children. Stop exposing them to words that are depreciating and that are hurtful and that are harmful and that are hateful. Children do not need those kind of words in their vocabulary. Sometimes you can't help but hear it, but you can stop the imitation of it, the repeating of those words. That's what you can stop, so it doesn't become part of their vocabulary. Okay, that's number two. Number three is this: kids get low grades. You know, kids do get low grades. Why? Well, it's very simple. Because you allow it. You let it happen. Now, there are some children, because of their natural inabilities or their level of ability, may get a lower grade because they just don't have the intellectual or the language skills or the basic knowledge skills to really get better grades. But by and large, overall, children get low grades because we as parents allow it. We don't set the bar very high. You know, we just let the kid get whatever grade he gets. Or we say, "Well, don't get an F." Well, that means a child can get a D or a C. That's a pretty low grade by basically. Or we can say to a child, "You don't get grades lower than a B." You know, you just don't do that. You don't get grades lower than a C. You know, you can set the bar wherever you set it, And the child will live to that level, will learn to that level, will perform to that level. But you set the bar, you set the level. And if it's not a learning disability, if it's just the idea that the child is not motivated, the child is allowed to perform at a low level, the child will perform at a low level. You see, it's important that we determine the level of achievement of our children before school starts each year, before school starts each day. Okay? It's the idea of setting the tone, setting the expectation level, that homework is to be done. Homework is to be completed. Homework is to be turned in. Homework is to be done correctly. Homework is to be done at a level of a high level of achievement. That's what we do as parents. We set the bar. We set the pace. We set the level. And children will respond to that. Children will live to our level of expectation. If we allow a child to go through the evening and night after night after school, not do homework, not engage in any kind of homework whatsoever, that child will probably end up with low grades. And it's our fault as parents because we've allowed that to take place. We've not challenged our children to perform at a high level of achievement. So our expectations are very important relative to how children perform in school and the level of grades they receive from their learning. It isn't the teacher's fault. It's our fault as a parent if we don't set the bar high enough for that child to be challenged. Now, you don't have to set the bar way beyond the ability of a child, but you can set the bar slightly above. The child has to stretch. The child has to be challenged. The child has to work to achieve a level of success. The child will feel better about himself. That's where self-esteem comes in. When a child works hard and achieves, and then we recognize that, we praise that, and we approve that, and we affirm the child for their work, that's when they develop positive self-esteem. Okay, those are 3 points about darnest things kids do, but here's another one, 4. Kids get headaches and stomach aches, right? Under stress, kids get headaches. Under stress, kids get stomach aches. See, it's not uncommon for a child to get a headache and a stomach ache, and you take that child to a physician, and before you know it, you've worked up something like $10,000 or $20,000 worth of tests, checking out to see if the child's had a tumor, or a child's had some kind of a blockage, or a child has some kind of muscular tension level that would cause a headache. You know, might just be very simple. The stress level that the child is exposed to might be the base of their headache and their stomach aches. Sometimes it's the stress level of the parents. They're arguing in the home. They're fighting in the home. There's tension in the home. And a child reflects that in terms of headaches and stomach aches. Or it might be that you're expecting way too much of your child. Child just not possible to maintain that level of expectation. Yes, it's important to set an expectation just a little bit above what the child generally performs at. But if you set that expectation beyond the child's ability, way beyond what a child can actually produce, you create a stress on that child. And that stress is often manifest in stomach aches and headaches. So we take those seriously. Take pain seriously. And but you got to look at your own life. You got to look at your own home. You got to look at your own parenting relationships with your kids. Look at the way in which you discipline your children. The way that you live in your within your family life, within your marriage. Are you creating a stressful environment in their home? So that naturally your kids, after a period of time, otherwise they wouldn't have. So there are signs to take seriously, but there are also signs to look inward and look at yourself and look at yourself as a parent and look at yourself in your marriage and your family life and how you're living and how you're performing. And you better engage in some kind of self-stress management skill or technique or method or approach to get that out, get the stress levels of the home under control. Sometimes it's a matter of just sitting down with a kid and talking to a kid to what's stressing them and what's creating some of this distress, which is shown in the form of a headache or a stomach ache. Kids may know. Kids often will talk. Kids will indicate what they're concerned about. But you know, you have to sit down and talk to them. You have to be part of their life and get into their system of pain if that's what they're experiencing. So that's another thing that kids do. It's a darn thing for a kid to have to live with chronic headache and chronic stomach ache. They don't need to do that. Now, lastly today, what I'm going to like to just say this. Kids do one other thing. They have nightmares. They go to bed at night and they dream. They dream weird dreams. Sometimes they wake up. Sometimes they talk out loud. Sometimes they might even yell. Sometimes they might cry. See, nightmares are part of a child's life. And we as parents need to listen. What's going on? Listen to those nightmares. Listen to what a child says. And begin to analyze in terms of trying to put together the story. What is the story that this child is trying to tell in a nightmare? What is the story that this child is living in the form of a nightmare? What's the stress? What's the fear? What's the threat? What's the anxiety, you know, that child is experiencing? What's the worry? What's the trauma? What's the anxiety? What's the fright that child is experiencing? That needs to be explored. And you as a parent need to sit down with the child and talk and just begin to talk about these kind of things. And maybe you need a professional help. Maybe you need a child that just needs to talk to a therapist and get some of this nightmare kind of behavior understood and get it worked through so it can go away. Usually nightmares are related to something that's very anxiety-provoking, very distressing, very upsetting, very frightful to a child. Something that's happened recently or something that they're afraid of that could or might happen in the forthcoming future. And when that's the case, these children experience these kind of night traumas. And we as parents need to address that and take it seriously and deal with it ourselves and get a professional to help a child and help you as a parent deal with it in the context of your own home and helping that child be reassured, helping that child be comforted, help that child be more accepted, perhaps, or just the stress levels in their life reduced. But whatever it is, you need to get a hold of that because kids are telling you something. Kids tell us things this way. Kids tell us things by having headaches. Kids tell us things by having stomach aches. Kids tell us something by having their nightmares. Kids tell us what's going on in their life when they get low grades. Kids tell us something when they cuss and when they hit each other. What's the story? What are they trying to tell us? What are they trying to say? What are they trying to express? What's the feeling? What's the fear? What's the anxiety? What's the threat that they are living with and experiencing that causes them to do these kind of things? You know, take it seriously. Look behind the behavior. Look underneath the behavior, so to speak, and see what that child is experiencing emotionally, what they're afraid of. And then you can deal with that so that those kind of behavior patterns can be resolved. Child doesn't have to live with nightmares. Child doesn't have to live with fear of having a headache or a stomach ache. Child doesn't have to live with cussing behaviors, and they don't have to live with aggressive behaviors. They don't have to live that way. But we as parents have need to address it. We need to understand that each of these kind of behavior patterns tell a story. And what is the story that your child is trying to tell? And what's important is that you unfold that story and you reshape that story and you redirect that story so the story has a better ending than otherwise it would have. That's what you do as a parent. That's what's important, you know, as a parent. Now, let me just give you the last word of advice here. Be a positive, approachable, and a very close relational parent with your children from birth onward. Let me just say that again. As a parent, be a positive, approachable, and close relational parent to your children from birth onward. It's important that you connect with your children. It's important that you be part of their life. It's important that you have this kind of symbiotic relationship with them so that you can feel as they feel. You can sense what they sense. You can have that kind of connectedness, so that when they feel stress, you feel the stress as well. And you can respond to that, and you can help them, you can deal with it. You can help them resolve it and live beyond it and live much more healthy, I mean, in a much more positive kind of way. Anyway, this has been the Psychology Report, and it's good to have you with me today as we kind of look at this. This is kind of part one today on kids do the darndest things. I'm going to do part two tomorrow and just give you another set of behavior patterns that kids engage in and we need to be aware of as parents and help our kids process this and help them live above the line of stress and live more productively and, you know, successfully. So that's very important, you know, to your children. So make sure that you not only listen to this podcast, part one, but you pick up part two that's coming. Okay? Thanks for joining me today. And again, I send you to my website, booksbyhedberg.com. Great book there on parenting. Pick it up, read it, use it as part of your parenting, you know, process. That would be a very excellent way to do it. Okay? Bye for now.